You guys ready? Are you ready? Because I'm certainly ready, because now it is time for the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Look Back and Animat's Reviews. Now, if this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, the title will go and explain everything about what this is all about. It has the word animation on it, so that's the main thing that we are going to be focusing on. Or at least the subject around it will be related to that. You got it? Okay, sweet, cool. Now, for example though, in this episode, we're going to start things off by looking into a live-action movie of Dora the Explorer and why everybody is freaking out over it. Then afterwards, we will be looking into the trailer of an upcoming animated Netflix series based on Stretch Armstrong. Then afterwards, we will be updating on what's going on with Chris Savino as he fails to attempt an apology. Then afterwards, we will be looking into Animation is Film, the latest big animation festival where they have crowned the winners of that festival. And finally, we will end things off with Animat's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then all you have to do is head on down to Filmbook, which is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. And for our first story right over here, man, people are going crazy over this news. And it's kind of interesting because at first when I saw this, I didn't necessarily think much of it. Like, I saw the headline and, okay, it seems regular as usual. I guess people are just major Dora fans. But it's not necessarily that aspect that they're freaking out. It's not necessarily the fact that there's going to be a Dora the Explorer movie. It's more who is going to be involved with it. And allow me to go and explain. Now, the news is that Paramount has announced that they want to go and create a live-action Dora the Explorer movie. Now, this is going to be a top priority at the studio since they are thinking of having a 2019 release. And even though they didn't hire a director as of yet, or they didn't hire a cast who's going to be playing like Dora or Boots or Diego or Swiper or anything like that, they did announce, however, that Nick Stoller is going to be the writer of this movie. And so far, that's all we know about it. And by the way, I just want to mention right now, for those of you who are not too familiar with Dora the Explorer, it was one of the most popular Nickelodeon shows. In fact, it could actually be the most popular Nicktoons preschool show, considering that you got this little Latina girl and her assistant, like her partner Monkey, who would go and teach kids how to speak Spanish and go on little adventures. That's kind of the whole gist of Dora the Explorer in general. It was widely popular, it was beloved by children everywhere, and it looks like right now it's got a chance to have its own major movie. I would like to point out, however, this is not the first time that Paramount was trying to go and create a movie out of Dora the Explorer. Using my source here on The Hollywood Reporter, in 2015, Paramount has been developing a movie with Tom Wheeler from Puss in Boots writing and Mary Parent producing. And that's all we know about it, is that for a while, Paramount wanted to try to create a Dora the Explorer movie, and now they're giving it a second shot at it, this time with Nick Stoller as the writer. Okay, so it seems ordinary. Everything seems fine as usual. So the question remains, what is it specifically that people are freaking out about this Dora the Explorer movie? Well, allow me to read it to you. Let me go back on my source. The movie will be produced by Platinum Dunes, the production company run by Andrew Form, Brad Fuller, and Michael Bay. So basically, the big thing that people are freaking out over is the fact that Michael Bay is going to be producing a Dora the Explorer movie. Now, admittedly, when I first read that, I had to double check to really see if this is the same Michael Bay we're talking about. Like, is this the same, like, Transformers, Armageddon, Pearl Harbor Michael Bay that loves explosions, America's number one, and loves to stare at bikini models' butts? Like that Michael Bay? And I had to double check. I had to research. Is Platinum Dunes really what they say they are? Is this the same Michael Bay? And the answer is yes. This is legitimately Michael Bay trying to produce a Dora the Explorer movie. Why the fridge is Michael Bay producing a Dora the Explorer movie? These are like two freaking opposites, and yet here they are meshed up together. I mean, this... why? That doesn't make sense. Now, I know that there are people out there, they could make the argument that, well, technically Michael Bay is only producing the movie. He's not necessarily going to be directing the project. So this isn't necessarily Michael Bay's Dora the Explorer. We're not going to see like a whole bunch of crazy explosions happening while Dora is trying to teach kids how to speak Spanish. Okay, that is true. However, even if he is just producing, like, you could still smell the stench of Michael Bay in that movie. And a great example that I have is with the recent Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movies. Now, say what you will about them, you can enjoy them, you can think they suck, like, I've heard a lot of mixed reactions over it. But the big thing that you cannot deny about those films is that you can see a lot of Michael Bay-isms all over those movies. Like, it's almost like it could have been directed by Michael Bay, and that guy certainly had a major influence in bringing these films to life. So that's the thing, is that when you bring Michael Bay involved, he will certainly be involved with that project. Now, another argument that people could make regarding Michael Bay in this is that, well, he is just a producer, and you never know, with his producing credits, he could do a lot of stuff. Maybe there actually is a credit where he produced a movie that is more similar to the veins of Dora the Explorer. And that could be true, you know, that could actually be a good point right over there. So maybe there is something that Michael Bay did where he actually produced some kind of family film or a little comedy or something that more kids could actually enjoy. And no, actually no, he did none of that. There are only two things that he produced. Whenever he would go and not produce one of his crazy exploding action movies, he would be producing horror films. And I'm going on IMDb and looking into his producing credits. There are a lot of them that when it comes to his horror credits, they would actually be either remakes of classics or they would be Blumhouse films. Like, I see right over here that some of the horror films that he produced includes Texas Chainsaw Massacre at the beginning, the 2009 Friday the 13th film, the 2010 Nightmare on Elm Street, and then also with Blumhouse, he would be producing the Purge movies and also the Ouija films. So that's kind of the thing, is that he would be producing either crazy action movies or he would be producing horror movies, none of which fit in the category of Dora the Explorer. So really, it does make me a little bit concerned. Like, I have never seen an episode of Dora the Explorer, but I dread to see what the fridge is Michael Bay gonna do to really turn it into his movie with Dora the Explorer. Like, honestly, that's going to be a piece of madness that I am questioning if I really do want to see. But then there is one more argument, actually, regarding Dora the Explorer, is the fact that, well, when you look at the show, there really is nothing for Michael Bay to really enforce many of his big, not his cliches, but a lot of his trademarks in there. Like, you're not gonna see something similar to Transformers and Dora the Explorer. I mean, this is just a little Latina girl going on little adventures with talking objects and talking animals. It's simple as that. Well, okay, yeah, that is true. And I mean, with the movie, maybe they will amp up the adventureness, try to make something a little bit bigger for Dora to go. And apparently it says that the movie will actually be how Dora and her cousin Diego are going to be moving to the big city as teenagers. Oh. Oh God, no. Oh dear. Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. Oh my God. Dora the Explorer as a teenager. And with Michael Bay involved. Why do I have the feeling that this movie will try to say that she's 16, yet Michael Bay is still going to hire some Latina bikini model to be playing as Dora?
Can you say el culo?
Mmm, me gusta! Oh boy! Man, there are so many ways that I could see this go into a completely different direction that I don't think the creators of Dora intended this to go. Like, oh my God, why Michael Bay? Out of all the freaking people working at Paramount, why did you bring in Michael Bay to work on this movie? I mean, yeah, I get it, like, he brought Transformers to life, he brought Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles to life, oh, maybe he's gonna do the same thing with Dora the Explorer. No! That's not how it freaking works! Have you seen his freaking movies? They are not the material to make a Dora the Explorer movie with! Okay, now, if I could be a little bit more serious for a moment, there is one silver lining that I actually do see. Something that actually does tell me that there actually is a chance that this Dora the Explorer movie could actually work, and it could actually be good. And that is actually with the credits of Nick Stoller. Now, in recent years, Nick has definitely proven that he can actually do some pretty good work, and he has experience with working with projects like Dora the Explorer, considering that not only his directing credits, but especially his writing credits, actually do include comedies, family films, and working with already existing properties. If I can go on his IMDb page, there actually are a lot of good credentials under his belt. Like, in the start of his career, he started doing some writing for some Jim Carrey movies like Fun with Dick and Jane and Yes Man. He then would go and work on the Neighbors movies starring Zac Efron and Seth Rogen. He actually did work on the recent Muppet films like the 2011 Muppets movie and Muppets Most Wanted. And just recently, he actually did work on some animated films. He was actually credited with Warner Brothers Storks, and just recently, he was credited as one of the writers of DreamWorks' Captain Underpants, the first epic movie. So, at the very least, the most positive thing that I could say about this Dora the Explorer movie is that, at least in terms of the script, it is in good hands. I'm confident that Nick Stoller can actually go and create something entertaining for it, not just for the little kids that enjoy Dora, but also for family films, most likely something that both kids and adults can certainly enjoy. It's more just the fact that Michael Bay is involved, where I'm not really trusting, and Michael Bay, as a producer, he's pretty much the big boss of this, so his final say goes before even what the director wants to do. And that's the part that does make me a little bit scared. I don't know what the fridge is gonna happen, but I feel like we're kind of mixing some things that shouldn't be going together, and we're gonna see, no pun intended, a giant explosion happening before our eyes. this could actually either really do work or it could fail in epic proportions. Who the fridge knows is gonna happen? But now we're stuck in a position where Michael Bay is going to be producing a Dora the Explorer movie. Like, what the fridge else is next? Like, are we gonna see Michael Bay do, like, a Fairly Odd Parents movie? Is he gonna be producing the next SpongeBob film now? Like, what the fridge are you gonna do? Why Paramount? Why do you really have to have Michael Bay involved in so many of your freaking projects? This makes no sense. Oh my god. Man, I don't know. It's just, I'm a little scared to see what the fridge is going on with this Dora the Explorer movie. But if somehow you're excited to see what's gonna happen, what the madness will be in store with this entire Dora movie, if you're expecting somewhere in the veins of something like that College Humor video, then all you have to do is apparently wait until 2019 for the movie's release, or what Paramount hopes to be the movie's release. Okay, so for our next story right over here, we actually got a Netflix animated series that's going to be coming up, and they have officially released a brand new trailer for it. Now, nowadays, when it comes to Netflix animated series, a lot of people share major doubts over it. Like, they don't know how to feel when Netflix got some new animation in front of us. Unless if it's from DreamWorks and they can bring us some awesome stuff like Trollhunters and Voltron, they can bring out some major crap that can look like total garbage. Case in point, you got the reboot of the Magic School Bus and the infamous Big Mouth. But this time right over here, I will say though that the animation does look a lot better, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a great series. And what I am talking about is going to be Stretch Armstrong and the Flex Fighters. Yes, this is going to be a brand new Hasbro series. They're hoping that they could take their old toy, Stretch Armstrong, and bring it to life into a major franchise in the veins of hopefully what they have done with something like My Little Pony, Transformers, G.I. Joe, and more. Now, the story goes, at least what the trailer is presenting us, is that this is a story about three best friends, and they somehow got hit by a bunch of toxic chemicals, and now their body parts can extend to far lengths. Like, now they got super stretchy limbs and their bodies can stretch into many different shapes and forms. And with that said, they kind of got hired by this government where they're pretty much now in charge of saving the city. Like, now they officially have to be superheroes. And in the meantime, they have to go through the struggle of being superheroes and also being high school students, where they have to manage a normal life, facing stuff that normal kids would face in high school, like having a crush or facing bullies or doing their homework and all that kind of stuff. That's kind of the main story that they're presenting right over here with Stretch Armstrong. And plus the fact that they also introduced a whole bunch of villains. Like, in every episode, the Flex Fighters and Stretch Armstrong are going to be facing all different sorts of strange and unique looking villains. Now, I will say though that at first it doesn't necessarily look too bad. Like I said before, the animation is actually pretty good. It does look like something in the veins of like Ben 10 or some of the animated Marvel series, like a lot of the Spider-Man ones, like rather it be just Spectacular Spider-Man or Ultimate Spider-Man, or even the recent one with Marvel's Spider-Man. So you got all that going around. And honestly though, when I mentioned that it looks like those shows, I feel like it's not necessarily a good thing. Because overall, when I see this trailer, it really does look pretty generic, I must say. Because that's the thing, is that a lot of the stuff that's happening, they're almost like cliches, in a sense, of like how they become superheroes and how they need to manage their life and all that stuff. It's like, it's taken from any other superhero type story. And, you know, it's not really that interesting, especially, like, you do see a lot of, like, the Spider-Man elements. Like, not too long ago, I have watched the whole Spectacular Spider-Man series, and I feel like there are some strong connections right over there, where you got the main superhero or superheroes in this sense that are all a bunch of high school students, and they have to learn the balance between managing a normal life in school while also being superheroes. So they have to go and try to mix that up all together. So that element is copied. And then also the whole toxic waste thing that, like, they got hit by that and then suddenly they got their superpowers. I mean, people nowadays are making fun of that old trope. And also, like, one thing that I feel like is a little bit of a turnoff is actually based on the superpowers that the main characters have. Now, usually when it comes to these TV shows, or when it comes to any type of projects related to superheroes, what they would do is that they would actually emphasize on the special ability that the superhero has. Like, that's kind of like the main selling point, because you really do want to see all the action and the superhero using all their moves to fight off bad guys. Marvel and DC have a whole arsenal of unique looking superheroes, and plus the fact that they have decades worth of backstory, and like you've heard of their story, like you've heard of their tales of what they've done and stuff like that. And even with something like Ben 10, he actually does have the unique ability of having a special alien-type watch where he can transform himself into one of 10 different types of alien creatures. What we have over here with Stretch Armstrong and the Flex Fighters is that the characters have stretchy bodies. And that's pretty much it. And honestly, I feel like at this point, like, super elasticity is kind of like one of the most generic superpowers to have. Like the ones that would be on top of them would be like the power of flight, super strength, and super speed. Like, I'm sure that superhero fans can name you at least 5 different superheroes that would have that type of ability. And I'm sure that any of those people can take this series, change the name, and they would immediately go and make a new series out of it. Like, I'm sure Marvel could take this show and they could turn it into a Fantastic Four series that would really put emphasis on Mr. Fantastic. Or they could, or like Disney could actually take this and change a little bit of the characters so that it could be an Incredibles prequel series where the main focus would be on Elastigirl. That's mostly the main, you know, that's just a few examples that I could think of what they could do to really just change it up, and it wouldn't make a difference whatsoever. And I mean, when it comes to Stretch Armstrong, the thing is that it all started out as this toy. You got a toy of Stretch Armstrong, and what he could do is that you, like, kids could go stretch him to like 10 feet with his arms and it would immediately go back to normal without a scratch. Like, that's basically the main thing. Now, I'm sure that maybe Hasbro has already done a backstory to Stretch Armstrong. Like, they have already provided some tales, like maybe some comics or something like that, that really does go into the backstory of Stretch Armstrong and how he got his superpowers and how he fights crime and maybe encounter some of the villains. But honestly, people are not necessarily that familiar with Stretch Armstrong, more so than they would with like the Marvel and DC characters. And that's where I feel like there's nothing in here that really does stand out. Now, I'm not saying that this show is bad, or that I'm not saying that this show is gonna suck or anything. I just feel like with what they're presenting right here, there's nothing that really does stand out. There's nothing that's unique about it. Like, I'm sure this could probably be better than something like Big Mouth, but it's just gonna be dull. Like, honestly, at worst, this thing is gonna be easily forgettable, and that's it. Maybe it could work out, maybe it won't, I'm just not sure. But if you want to go and check out the trailer, it's already up on YouTube. And if you guys are interested in checking out the Stretch Armstrong series to check out Stretch Armstrong and the Flex Fighters, then all you have to do is wait till it gets released on Netflix on November 17th. Now, for our next story right over here, we got an update regarding possibly the biggest animation story of last week, which is regarding Loud House creator Chris Savino getting fired from Nickelodeon for sexual harassment allegations. Now, things have progressed a little bit, and if you guys heard the last episode of the animation podcast, I discussed in full length of what pretty much happened, and we're already seeing some positive changes, like a big aftermath that the women of animation have collaborated together in order to make this huge campaign to pretty much put an end to sexism and sexual harassment in the animation industry, which is fantastic. But on Chris Savino's side, right now, apparently, he actually spoke out for the first time since his firing from Nickelodeon, and he actually sent out an apology letter. So before I get things started, I just want to clarify right now that considering that now he's saying that he's sorry, it pretty much does confirm that all the allegations are no longer allegations. They are actually true. And all the women that accuse him of sexual harassment, they are pretty much telling the truth. So without further ado, allow me to read you this little apology that Chris Savino wrote to the public on social media. It's stated, using my source here on Variety, "I am deeply sorry and I am ashamed. Although it was never my intention, I now understand that the impact of my actions and communications created an unacceptable environment. At every stage of my career, I have sought to uplift my colleagues and cultivate a culture of respect." Okay, I'm sorry. Let me read. "In this objective, I have failed." Well, no, duh. "I should have known better, I should have acted better, and this has been a difficult but valuable lesson. I have nothing but the deepest respect for the bravery of the women who have spoken out." Oh my god, is this guy for real? Oh my god, are you for real, man? Okay, I'm sorry. I got one more paragraph to read. "Trying to create an environment in which they can thrive to their fullest potential." Okay, so that's pretty much the entire apology letter that he has sent. But I just want to say right now, I don't know about you guys, but man, I call bullcrap on this. I call total freaking bullcrap on this apology letter. Now, like I said before, it's pretty much confirmed at this point that Chris Savino did sexually harass these women. Like, considering that now he did admit it in this apology letter, we can safely assure that what these women are saying about it and all those rumors are pretty much true. But when you think back about what those women have said about him and what Chris Savino is trying to portray himself in this apology letter, they do not match up. It does not make sense whatsoever. And what Chris Savino is trying to say, there's no logic to it. It does not make a single sense. There's no sense into it whatsoever. Now, I'm going to go, like, beat by beat on some of the things that he said in this letter That just makes no sense when you think about what people have said about Chris Avino. Okay, allow me to read. Okay. Although it was never my intention, I now understand that the impact of my actions and communications created an unacceptable environment. Okay. Number one, there's honestly one word in here that shouldn't even be there in the first place. And that is the word now. The fact that now he understands that what he has done is wrong. And you gotta keep in mind, what the women say about him is that he has spent years doing this. Like, this is throughout his career in animation. Like, no joke. He would actually go and harass these women, like, from catcalling to almost sexual abuse and all that kind of stuff. Like, he would be a real sexual predator for so many years. Some people are saying, like, around 15 years, not just in Nickelodeon, but all around the animation industry, even when he was working on Cartoon Network. So keep in mind, after 15 years, now you understand that maybe the way that I'm treating these women is a bad idea. Now you realize that, dude? Really? After, like, what, 15 years of it? Are you, my God, you must be one hell of a slow learner. And also, although it was never my intention, I mean, after 15 years, like, honestly, at that point, yeah, you got some pretty bad intentions. It's not like you've been continuously doing the same thing, thinking that, oh, I'm the good guy in this situation. Oh, I don't see what's wrong with it. I'm sure you must have had people calling you out on it before, and you just don't give a crap. So yeah, like, when you would do these sexual harassment acts, like, yeah, they definitely are your freaking intentions. And I'm not buying the fact that only now you realize that it's a bad idea. You know it's bad. You know what you're doing. And you're not realizing now that it's a bad idea. You know it's bad, but you're doing it anyways. Okay, let me move on to the next thing that he would actually say. At every stage of my career, I have sought to uplift my colleagues and cultivate a culture of respect. Was that your mission? Is that what you try to do? You try to create this level of respect? You know, you're trying to make yourself, like, a respectable figure in animation? For God's sakes, dude, you've been blackmailing your exes to never work in the animation industry again! Like, how is that freaking respect? And I mean, like, also another thing, like, cultivate a culture of respect. You know, when you're trying to cultivate that, it should not include checking out some of the girls in the business going, hey, babe, you got some nice tits. Mind if I squeeze a few? You know, you don't do that. Cultivate a culture of respect. I mean, when you do those things, people will talk behind your back saying that you are a terrible person for doing that, dude. It makes no sense. Those are not your freaking intentions, man. None of this, what you've said, is your intention. Like, I do not believe that you have sought to uplift my colleagues and cultivate a culture of respect. That is pure freaking bullcrap. Right over there. The only thing I can agree is that, like, honestly, throughout this entire apology letter, the only thing that I could agree here is the fact that he said that he has failed, he should have known better, he should have acted better, and this has been a difficult but valuable lesson. Okay, maybe not that last one, a difficult but valuable lesson. Yeah, bullcrap. I'll get to that one later, but yeah. Like, it is true, you are a failure, and you should have freaking known better, and you should have freaking acted better by not freaking harassing these women! Is that so freaking hard? But honestly, if there is one thing that really did trigger me in this apology letter, the one that I can totally tell that is purely freaking bullcrap is the last paragraph, the last thing that he has said. I have nothing but the deepest respect for the bravery of the women who have spoken out, trying to create an environment in which they can thrive to their fullest potential. The way that he is trying to praise these women. Oh, good for you. You really are so brave for calling out on such terrible actions. I call frickin' bullcrap. There is no way this would come from frickin' Chris Savino whatsoever. And allow me to explain why that this is a flat-out lie coming from him. You gotta think in the position that he is in. It's not just the fact that he got fired from Nickelodeon. Beforehand, he was at the highest peak of his entire career. He is he was credited as the creator of The Loud House. Like, this is a show in which Nickelodeon has never had such a more successful animated series since Fairly Odd Parents and SpongeBob SquarePants. It really put Nickelodeon back on the map, and it really made audiences fall in love with the channel all over again. Like, he really was at the top of his game. Chris Savino was on the right path to become the next Butch Hardman and Stefan Hillenburg. But then his past came back to haunt him, and because of the whole Harvey Weinstein scandal, women are finally brave enough to actually go and speak out to those who have harassed them in the past. And that's exactly what happened here with Chris Savino. The women of animation has had enough of all the bullcrap that Chris Savino is having. They are tired of seeing a horrible human being getting so much praise because he made a simple little dumb cartoon. And they decided to call him out, saying that he is a sexual harasser. And Nickelodeon rightfully took action to go and fire him. So that's kind of the big thing, is that these women that he has harassed over the years, it's not that they made him fired, they made him fired at his prime. So with all that said, would that make sense if Chris Savino would call these women so brave for speaking out and to create an environment in which they can thrive to their fullest potential? No! I'm sure this guy, considering the things that the women have said about him, he would be pissed off at these women. He would be just completely enraged. Like, we know for a fact that he's the kind of person that would not treat women as regular people. Like, he's the kind of person that would treat women like objects. He must be freaking livid that his position as one of the top animation creators has been stripped down to him. It's like, honestly, I don't see him, like, when he got fired at Nickelodeon, I do not see him, like, so happy thinking, like, oh, congratulations, ladies. You're so brave for calling out on me saying that you have nice tits and that I want to squeeze them. Oh, good for you. You know, that's fantastic. I'm gonna go now. Come on, man. That's freaking bullcrap. This is one of the most shallow and garbage-filled apologies that I have ever seen. And let me tell you guys, I am not the only one who thinks like that. In fact, the grand majority of people who have seen this apology from Chris Savino, they're pretty much calling it, they're calling him out on it. In fact, going back in my source on Variety, looking into the comment section, there are honestly some really interesting comments that are placed in here. And these actually do come from not only people in the animation industry who are familiar with Chris Savino, but some of the victims of Chris Savino. Allow me to read some of them. So there's one right over here that says, oh, so it wasn't intentional when you asked for photos of my tits? I get it. Great joke. Enjoy your new Michigan-based art college teaching career. And then you also got another one that says, the news outlets are reporting 12 women. Those of us in the studio know there were dozens more, and that they were not just Nickelodeon employees. They were young women from all over, just getting their start in the industry. Some were students and interns. He texted them late at night, hit on them, harassed them, acted possessive of them, physically assaulted some of them. I do not accept this hollow apology, and I do not believe this man ever deserves a second chance. And there is one more that I want to read you guys. Savino, you are such a compulsive narcissist that getting caught is the only reason you'll stop. It makes sense that you worked in cartoons because you're a straight-up cartoon villain. A cartoon villain whose dick nobody wanted to see and nobody will want to see. Nobody wants to see your dick. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of the big thing. No, like, the grand majority of people are not buying this apology. You can totally tell that this is fake and that it's not that Chris Savino is sorry for his actions. He's just sorry that he got caught. And for me personally, this is why I do not forgive Chris Savino. It's because you could definitely tell that he is bullcrapping his apology. And I am not buying the fact that he would learn anything from this. I'm sure if you bring him back in the animation industry, the cycle will just continue all over again. And I know for a fact he is never going to go work, he's never going to work at Nickelodeon again. And I know for a fact, and honestly, I definitely do hope he never works in the animation industry again. And I say that not because I hate Chris Savino, but I care a lot more about the safety of women in the workplace more so than I do over some Nickelodeon TV show. I'm just saying. So yeah, screw Chris Savino and screw everything about him, man. The guy's a freaking dick. Hopefully he'll never work in the animation industry again. Whew, that was quite a load that I let out. Okay, now, with all that said, let's go ahead and add some more positivity onto this podcast, and let's talk about one of the biggest events that happened last week, which was the Animation is Film Festival. Now, for those of you who don't know, Animation is Film is the brand new animation film festival that's pretty much going to be the next, like, the really big one that's going to be set in America. This is the festival that is organized by some of the biggest coordinators of animation. Like, this is organized by G-Kids, the Annecy International Film Festival, Variety, and also Asifa Hollywood. And a lot of the biggest names in animation would come together and they would go and present their films. However, I will say, though, this is mostly for independent films. This is not going to be like, oh, you're going to come and see, like, the next big movie that'll be out in theaters worldwide. This is mostly reserved for more independent animated features. And apparently what happened is that they have actually crowned the big winners. Like, at the end, like most festivals, they would present, like, a grand prize for, like, what would be the best animated feature that would be in there, considering that they also hired a panel of judges ranging from all different people in the animation industry. And some of these people include, like, Brenda Chapman, Jorge Gutierrez, Charles Solomon, Mabel Tam, Ann Thompson, Allison Abate, Bonnie Harold, and so much more. And apparently the big winner, actually the first big winner of the Animation is Film Festival is actually the breadwinner. So let me read my source here in Variety. It says that the breadwinner has been selected as the grand prize winner at the inaugural Animation is Film Festival, held last week at the TCL Chinese Theater in Hollywood. The breadwinner, directed by Nora Twomey of Ireland Animation Studio Cartoon Saloon, also took home the Audience Award. The film tells the story of a young girl who disguises herself as a boy to help feed her family during Taliban rule in Afghanistan. Peter de Bruge, the jury chairman and Variety chief film critic, stated, "The Breadwinner is not just an incredibly important film, but one that reminds us the power of animation to communicate serious issues in the world, transforming hardships into a warm and moving story. The movie represents a triumph by its director Nora Twomey in terms of script, voice acting, design, music, and editing. The films in competition this year illustrated the many techniques and possibilities of animation, but The Breadwinner was clearly a favorite among our jury." Also, on top of that, there is also a special jury prize that was given to the animated film The Big Bad Fox and Other Tales, which is an animated film created by the same people that brought us Ernest and Celestine. Now, I just gotta say right now, when it comes to the breadwinner actually winning the grand prize, personally, it's not really that surprising. Like, the first thing that I want to mention right now is that, oh my god, now I really want to go and see The Breadwinner. It really does sound amazing, and considering that it's now a huge favorite among festivals, like, I really want to go and check it out, especially also with Cartoon Saloon's credentials with Song of the Sea and The Secret of Kells. Like, I really need that on my, major must-watch list. But also, I mean, considering how big The Breadwinner is pretty much going, and especially how a lot of people would note out that one of the executive producers is actually Angelina Jolie, considering that this is a subject matter that she truly does believe in, one thing I wouldn't be surprised about in the future is if we're going to see The Breadwinner get a nomination at the Oscars for Best Animated Feature. That I can almost guarantee you that, considering that every year we have seen the Oscars nominate at least one independent animated feature annually, there, I would say the strongest chance of seeing one of them, like if there must be one independent animated film, it's going to be The Breadwinner. And one thing that I must say, that considering the massive praise that The Breadwinner has been getting throughout these years, I think, like, if we wait a little bit until the Oscars would come in and they would mention who's going to be, like, nominated for Best Animated Feature, like, if The Breadwinner does get that nomination, I think we can officially solidify that Cartoon Saloon is the Irish Studio Ghibli. Because if you really do think about it, so far, the two star directors that they have is Nora Twomey and Tom Moore. Since they both collaborated together to work on The Secret of Kells, and then you got Tom Moore, who directed Song of the Sea, and he's currently working on another animated feature right now, and now you got Nora Twomey, whom, when she goes solo, she did The Breadwinner. And what's also interesting, another connection, is how they go into the cultural aspect, when they want to go into the more, like, they want to go into the more mythological aspect, or they really want to emphasize the culture where the movie is set in. Like, in the Miyazaki films, you'll see a lot of European influences, and also going into a lot of Japanese mythology, especially with movies like Spirited Away, for example, or even with My Neighbor Totoro, or Ponyo, or Howl's Moving Castle. But with Cartoon Saloon, with the movies that they have shown so far, they have presented a lot of Celtic mythology, and then you also got The Breadwinner right over here that looks into the culture of Afghanistan. And honestly, it really is quite fascinating when looking into the similarities. Honestly, that would be an interesting homework to do, to see what would Cartoon Saloon and Studio Ghibli have in common. And on top of that, you could definitely tell that there are some movies from Cartoon Saloon, especially with Song of the Sea, that there are some massive influences of Studio Ghibli that's in there. I'm just saying. But yeah, honestly, it really is amazing. I mean, there is the argument that, yeah, sure, I mean, Cartoon Saloon so far has only made 3 animated features, and that's it. But then again, they have made 3 amazing animated features, where 2 of them earned an Oscar nomination, they have earned massive praise, and you got The Breadwinner right now that's already been getting the massive praise, and we'll see in the future if it's going to get that Oscar nomination. So, really, like, they really are becoming the next big thing. Like, Cartoon Saloon is really becoming huge in the animation industry. Like, you know, they're really becoming, like, kind of like the masters of their own domain, or at least like one of the probably the most beloved thing in Irish animation since Don Bluth was in there making movies like An American Tale and A Land Before Time. So yeah, it's honestly not really that surprising that The Breadwinner actually did win, but honestly, I really want to see the movie itself, and honestly, even though it's not that surprising, like, I'm sure it definitely does deserve it. It's like when a Pixar film would win the Oscar for Best Animated Feature. Are we all expecting it? Well, yeah, sure. Do they deserve it? Absolutely. So with all that said, I really want to congratulate Nora Twomey and the entire crew at Cartoon Saloon for this incredible honor for The Breadwinner. And also a special congratulations for The Big Bad Fox and Other Tales. And hopefully we'll see what other madness will in store for us at next year's Animation is Film Festival. And so finally, we will now end things off with Animat's Pick of the Week. And for this week, I'm going to talk about something that's a little bit similar to what I've previously talked about a few episodes ago. You may recall that I've mentioned about this special project that a whole bunch of artists and animators decided to come together and decided to completely reanimate an episode of the Super Mario World cartoon with the Mama Luigi episode, considering that one was actually quite popular on the internet, creating such memes such as, "That's Mama Luigi to you, Mario!" and so much more. Now, I have mentioned that with this type of reanimating something, it's not necessarily new, and it's always a fun project to see, especially when people would do it with Let's Plays. But this time, someone decided to go and take a classic cartoon and go give it that treatment. Reading from my source here on the Animation Scoop, it says that Woody Woodpecker must be very popular in Brazil. Oh, absolutely. Animator Ivanildo Suarez has just posted the payoff to a group group project he conceived, bringing 70 South American animators together to reanimate a vintage 1960s Walter Lantz theatrical cartoon with hilarious eye-popping results. The original cartoon, The Bird Who Came to Dinner, is a 1961 Paul Smith short in which Woody pretends to be a toy to gain access to a mansion and a free meal. But the plan does not go as expected. Every few seconds, the art and the animator changes, creating a unique blend of humor. The soundtrack, however, is still the original English language. So that's basically the whole idea. Instead of actually making something video game related, like taking an episode from a Mario cartoon or taking a Let's Play and animating that entirely, they decided to go and take a Woody Woodpecker cartoon. So this is something that's already been animated, that's already been done. It is its own cartoon, but 70 South American animators decided to collaborate together in order to go and breathe new life to this Woody Woodpecker cartoon. Now, I'm going to be very honest. I have actually seen both the reanimated version and the original cartoon for the sake of this podcast. And I got to say, when it comes to the cartoon, I don't know how to put this. I don't think I can even say that it's good. Like, at best, it's honestly really mediocre. You gotta keep in mind, this is a cartoon from the 60s. And during that time, the quality of cartoons, theatrically released cartoons in general, they have gone all the way down, considering that television has become the brand new thing. And especially, by the time The Bird Who Came to Dinner was released, Hanna-Barbera has already established its place in the cartoon world. Like, they have already started making a career on television animation, already adapting cartoon, you know, well, not adapting, but already creating cartoons such as the Flintstones and Huckleberry Hound and Yogi Bear. So they're already starting to put their place in cartoons, and they don't necessarily need animation quality to make those cartoons. So the same thing happened with cartoons in general in theaters. Like, I know that Warner Brothers got a massive hit. Like, they really need to reduce their quality. And some of them really did adapt it very well. Like, Chuck Jones actually released some of his greatest cartoons at that time. But then there are some, like, once the 60s rolled in, that's when the quality of everything really shoots down. And especially with this Woody Woodpecker cartoon. Like, I know that when you look back into, like, the 50s and his cartoons in the 40s, they're, like, Woody Woodpecker really does have some very fluid animation. But this one, however, is a lot more limited, and you could tell the style, the cartoon, the design, per se, is a lot more cartoony. It's going more into the Hanna-Barbera route. So, it's not necessarily all that, you know, it's not all that interesting, and even the jokes, they're not all that great. But that's the cartoon itself. I'm referring to the 1961 cartoon that Paul Smith directed. Now, when it comes to this remake, when it's completely reanimated, it is definitely better. Like, now I can actually say that with this new reanimated thing, it is good, because it does breathe a little bit new life. And you're not watching it because of the cartoon itself. Like, now you're watching it because you want to see all the different styles that would come out of it. And yeah, there are many different, like, there is such a wide variety of styles. Not only people using different animation mediums, but also, like, you see a different look. You see a different fluidity. Sometimes it could be, like, really choppy or really limited, and some of them can be very fluid. It's really interesting to see the different styles and the different interpretations of how they do Woody Woodpecker. Now, I will say, though, that when it comes to the dubbing, like, if you look at the lip sync, I've only seen the English dub of it. There's also another dub that they have done. Like, you see the same reanimated video, but it's in the Portuguese language. And I think, like, considering that it is South American animators, they did use the Portuguese dub in order to go and animate Woody Woodpecker, because you could definitely tell in terms of the mouth movements, they're definitely speaking Portuguese, and it doesn't connect with what the English soundtrack is pretty much saying. But that's not necessarily a criticism. That is honestly something that you guys actually should do. Not just watch the original cartoon, but watch the reanimated version, and also watch the Portuguese version as well, just to get a good idea of what it's all about. And honestly, it really is fun, you know, just to see the different looks of how people would interpret this cartoon. And like I said before, it really does breathe brand new life. It's very similar to what recently happened with the Super Mario World cartoon. They, you know, where like a whole bunch of animators collaborated together to do this one big project. And doing it with Woody Woodpecker, you know, it definitely is fun. It definitely is nice. And, you know, maybe they could, you know, maybe this could be something they could do a lot more of. Maybe, like, this could be, like, an entire series of itself where animators can collaborate together in order to reanimate many more Woody Woodpecker cartoons. Who knows? But, yeah, overall, I would say this is a lot of fun to watch. And, like, after this podcast, like, I highly recommend you go and see it and check out what basically the animators have, like, just in terms of, like, the crazy ideas that they can think of. And also, one more thing that I would recommend you checking out in terms of this entire reanimated Woody Woodpecker cartoon, you can actually go into the source here on the Animation Scoop, and you would actually find the credits of every single person that actually did animate a scene for this Woody Woodpecker cartoon, along with a link to their social media, rather it be like on YouTube or their own website, on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter, or wherever they would actually post their link in, they would actually have their link to see what it's all about. And yeah, I highly recommend that you guys go and check it out just for the sake of watching this new version of an old cartoon. And that will be all that I got for this week. So thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You could go ahead and find more of my work at film-book.com. All you have to do is search for Magic Brunette or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at Animat505. Now, if you have listened to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, you know what would be a really awesome thing for you to do? Just go and rate and review this episode. That would be really awesome of you. And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that like button and leave us a little comment on your thoughts on the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening, and until next week, see you later, dudes!